Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, folks, welcome in to Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by our good friends over at Superbook Sports. I'm your host, Ryan Blackburn, at NBA Blackburn on Twitter, part of the Mile High Sports Podcast Network, and I'm excited to talk about last night's Denver Nuggets win as the Denver Nuggets defeat the Minnesota Timberwolves, an injured Minnesota Timberwolves team, final score 115 to 112. If you can hear it in my voice, I'm still sick. I'm doing my best. I really am just trying to get the content out and do the right thing for Nuggets Nation and be here and ever present and whatnot. But if you're having trouble with this, I suggest you go over to milehighsports.com where I did a full write-up of the game last night. And if you're just trying to come up with different things to read about the Nuggets and hear about the Nuggets, then that is the best place to go get my content. But I'm doing my best here, I promise. I've got my water, I've got my coffee, I've got some cough drops, although they have not really been super helpful, but doing what I can. We will try to grind through and get it done. This will probably be a shorter podcast as a result, but still doing my best. So thank you so much to everybody for hopping in. Hit that like button. Hit that subscribe button if you're new. That would be tremendous. All right. Let's get into the game. Let's get into the Nuggets and just kind of how things have really evolved for them over the course of this year through games like this. I don't think anybody was of any inclination that Denver would blow out the Timberwolves. There was no way that that was happening. It felt very clear how this game was going to go. Fourth game on a four-game road trip. Denver was clearly tired. They were clearly not as locked in as they probably could have been. But they started off and had some good moments. I will say that Denver had an obvious advantage pretty early on in this game. When you don't have Karl Anthony Towns, you don't have Rudy Gobert, you don't have Naz Reid, and the opposing team starts Kyle Anderson to have to guard Nikola Jokic, of all people, it's pretty clear that Denver's going to press that button. And the great thing about when another team is playing small, it's not just Jokic who really benefits from it. It is Aaron Gordon. It is Michael Porter. It is Jamal Murray. It's everybody. Because there's so much attention that has to be given to Nikola Jokic and to even Aaron Gordon, that everybody kind of benefits from it. It's a nice little snowball effect that sort of comes with it. So credit to the Nuggets for taking advantage of that. They started this game off pretty strongly, started this game off by going into the lane as often as they could. And any possession where they didn't try to get into the lane, I thought was a pretty weak one. I thought that they were, they had plenty of opportunities to get into the paint, to dominate the glass, to dominate that interior area, and whenever they did, they were successful. Jokic and Aaron Gordon at the center of that, obviously. Jokic, I believe, sort of midway through the second quarter had 10 rebounds, and Aaron Gordon midway through the second quarter had 9 rebounds, and a lot of those were on the offensive glass. Those guys were doing what they were supposed to do, and they got all those other guys into foul trouble pretty early and did a nice job. Jamal Murray, I thought, set the table really nicely in the first half. He had, 8 assists in that first half, and most of that was getting the ball to Jokic in positions to succeed. Other point guards can do that. I don't want to just sit here and praise Jamal automatically for getting a good assist total, but he pressed the right buttons and did a really nice job in the first half. I thought he got a little bit away from it in the second half, not necessarily with Joker specifically, but just with the process that he was trying to get to. But there's still some good things to be had from what Jamal did. And Denver was up. They were up like 70-55, I believe, at the halftime point. And I had tweeted earlier in that game that I was just waiting for the third quarter run. Because Denver's kind of told us how they go about these games, right? We know what they're going to do. We know they're not going to come out pretty strong in the second half. You know, they're going to kind of wax and wane with their effort a little bit. And what Denver did, very clearly, was let their foot off the gas. And they allowed Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels to get going. They allowed Mike Conley to get to spots where he could be creative. Kyle Anderson was hitting turnaround step-back jumpers and things like that. It was all the stuff that you're not necessarily hoping for. And Denver's energy was piss poor. But it was also not surprising because, again, they're at the end of a four-game road trip. They were in a pretty interesting position where, like, obviously the opposing team, they're pretty injured. They're still dangerous, and Denver knew that. But I think that Denver just kind of thought that they could do what they did in the first half. And it doesn't work like that. They had to bring additional effort, and that just didn't really come. They're also pretty imprecise. Some bad turnovers from Aaron Gordon, from Michael Porter, even Nikola Jokic. Those guys combined for 10 of Denver's 17 turnovers, and the third quarter was a pretty ugly quarter for that. And then they kind of lose all momentum. Jokic eventually goes out at the end of the third quarter, and the bench comes in at the beginning of the fourth quarter with Jamal Murray, with Aaron Gordon, Justin Holiday, Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, and they scored 2 points in 5 minutes. And the defense that the T-Wolves were playing was tremendous. It was great. Like, that's what they're supposed to do. But it's very clear to me that there are certain circumstances, and I'm going to talk about this in the second segment a little bit. There are certain circumstances where that bench unit is not going to be successful when the opposing team latches onto something. When they latch onto, and in this case, it's blitzing Jamal Murray, getting the ball out of his hands, or keeping him at half court, as opposed to in good position to score. And so Denver and the bench unit with Jamal and AG, and it was with AG. AG had moments where he could have been successful and was not successful in those points. But they couldn't score. And so Denver, they get back to it. They switch out basically half of the rotation. Jokic and Porter come back into the game. Immediate 7-0 run for Michael Porter. Really, really impressive stuff from him. I think he finished the game with 26 points. And that was exactly what Denver needed in that moment. And it shows what, like, he's had these moments before, obviously, where he gets a scoring outburst. He gets to be in a good position against an opposing team. And where Jamal Murray's off the court, Jokic and MPJ, they play a different kind of two-man game, a one that's a little bit more either aggressive right to the rim for Porter, or it's behind the arc. Whereas Jamal and Jokic, they'll kind of dance in the mid-range a little bit and focus more on those areas as opposed to the money ball areas, which is why sometimes the Jokic-MPJ two-man game looks even a little bit more dynamic at times, because they are getting the most valuable shots possible. And so MPJ, he saves the game in a little bit. Like, I think he had 12, 13, 14 points in the fourth quarter alone, and just did a fantastic job of putting the team on his back when they could not score. The lineup with Murray out there leading it, it just wasn't good enough. And those guys weren't ready for the ball pressure that was applied by Minnesota. Jokic and MPJ were. And they delivered on that. They saved the game late. Some clutch threes from Nikola Jokic. A nice little kind of floating jumper in the middle of the floor over Mike Conley. Just really, really impressive shot making from Nikola Jokic for most of this last game. Even though he started it off 0-3, I think he finished 13 of 19, which means he was 13 of 16 for the rest of the game. Like, that's gross. But the T-Wolves never went away. Not fully. And they had a chance to tie it at the end of the game because of how great their shooting was. For a long time, it wasn't very good for much of that game. Not surprising because they're on the second night of a back-to-back. But then they dug deep, and Jaden McDaniels hit some crazy threes. Mike Conley hit a crazy three. Anthony Edwards is doing his thing. And they just stuck around for a long time until the very end where, like, Denver plays the free throw game and they get up by 3 points. And Anthony Edwards has an opportunity to tie it right at the buzzer. And he draws front iron. Probably has something to do with the back-to-back that Minnesota was playing. But Denver benefits. And they go up and they claim second place now in the Western Conference at this point. And it was good to see. Good to see Denver sort of recover from the Dallas experience. That was a clutch game that they probably should have won. Some faux pas towards the end of the game that sort of prevented them from doing that. Denver didn't let that happen this time around. They put the pressure on Minnesota in the clutch. Minnesota was great in response, but they were just not great enough. And that's what happens. Like, Denver's really, really tough in the clutch. And with Porter playing the way that he did, with Jokic shooting the way that he did, Murray not necessarily great, but he finished with 11 assists and 2 turnovers when being guarded by Jaden McDaniels and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, which I thought was pretty impressive. When those guys are putting pressure on the opposing team, it's going to be very, very fascinating. I'm curious to see what a team like Minnesota looks like full strength versus Denver, because both of these teams, they seem very well matched. Going to be very tough, and it's going to be on Denver to raise their level even more, because I think Minnesota's got the goods. I really do. I think that they're probably the team in the Western Conference that is the most likely to upset the Nuggets over a 7-game series. Will they? Probably not. Like, Denver will probably go back to the NBA Finals. But if there was a team, I think Minnesota is it. And we can talk about why on the other side. I'll talk about some offensive weak points that I saw, some different things that Denver can get into. We will get into all of that in just a second. But first, you hear my voice there. I sounds like I'm going through puberty. Folks, we're changing the game at Superbook Sports. I'm sure Superbook's going to be super happy about the puberty comment. The most trusted name in sports gambling with a direct line to Las Vegas. And now you can use promo code MILEHIGH and score up to $250 with their first bet bonus. Win or lose, Superbook will match your first bet up to $250 with promo code MILEHIGH. Download the Superbook Sports app, enter that promo code, and you'll get $250 courtesy of Superbook Sports. Visit Superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. We'll be right back on Pickaxe and Roll.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We're back. Pickaxe and Roll. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. I wanted to talk about three things that I think have really stood out in the last year or so, just sort of evolving how we kind of talk about Denver, different lineups, different things that, like, look, these are things that are going to be impacting the playoffs, things that are going to be impacting how Denver goes about their business. Offensive weak points. Denver, I think they did a great job for the most part, especially in the last playoffs, of avoiding these weak points. They are generally pretty good, but they do exist, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. Wouldn't surprise me at all if these come back to bite Denver at least a little bit, and they put Denver into a pretty tough position to repeat. Now, you can't have everything. And obviously, you don't have Bruce Brown. He does a great job, or he did a great job last year, in helping Denver get through some of these weak points that I'm about to talk about. The first one is when Murray leads the bench unit, it puts a ton of pressure on Murray individually. And the personnel that Denver has around him, it generally isn't great for releasing that pressure. And here's how I'll kind of go about it. When Michael Porter or KCP is not out there, Denver's mostly going with Justin Holiday, Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, and either Zeke Nagy or Aaron Gordon, depending on how much they care about the game. When you have that group, all you're going to see from the opposing team is full court pressure on Jamal. He'll bring the ball up the floor most of the time, and the opposing guards will bring the ball, like they'll carry him the entire time up the floor, where they'll try to get him to turn, they'll try to go for the ball at times, they'll try to put physical pressure on him, get him to get tired. And that's a heavy burden to share when Denver doesn't really have a ton of other people that bring the ball up the floor, even in their starting unit. Like, Jokic will do it, and he does it relatively frequently. But for the most part, Murray takes on that burden too. Like, KCP's not doing that. Michael Porter's not doing that. Aaron Gordon will do it on occasion, but for the most part, it's Murray. And we actually saw this last year in the playoffs, where one of the things that Minnesota did was they were full court pressuring with Nickeil Alexander-Walker. They were slowing down Denver's offense a little bit, and they were tiring Murray out throughout the game because they were attacking him on the opposing end, but they're also just like never letting him have a free moment to breathe. And that's a good thing if you are an opposing team. That's what you want to do. But for Denver, they've got to come up with other options. And so one of those things is to have a pressure release valve, somebody who can share some of that burden, which is why it's why Michael Malone consistently went to Reggie Jackson early on in the season. Because when you play 2 point guards out there, okay, one of them's being blitzed, one of them's being picked up full court, get it to the other guy. Have them split the burden. Have them share in that. The other thing is that when there's not a ton of spacing around Murray with the bench unit, whenever he runs pick and roll with either Zeke Nagy or Aaron Gordon, you're getting hard hedges. You're getting double teams. You're getting this mix of coverages that is very aggressive, that is meant to tire out Murray, that's meant to get him to make mistakes. And it's meant to get the ball out of his hands. And so if he gets the ball to Aaron Gordon or Zeke Nagy in the middle of the floor, that's great. With Aaron Gordon, he can do something with that. With Zeke Nagy, what's he doing with it? Like, when you get the ball to Zeke Nagy in the middle of the floor, all he's trying to do is pass it to somebody else and create. Because when he starts creating off the dribble, it generally does not go well for Denver. It's either a turnover or a missed layup. And so Murray tries to hold on to the ball. And I've seen a lot of criticism of Murray in terms of over dribbling, in terms of doing too much, trying to do too much. And I guess my counter to that is, okay, what's the other option? What's the other option with the bench unit specifically? What should they do? Are you going to give it to Christian Brown to create off the dribble a little bit? He can do that on occasion. But if it's not a good matchup for him, are you going to have him do that consistently? Probably not. If it's Peyton Watson, are you going to have him create off the dribble? He had a pretty bad game last game. I thought he was bad. I thought that there were some pretty weak moments for both him and Christian Brown, if I'm being honest. And so whenever those guys had opportunities, Christian made 1-3 that was created by somebody else late in the shot clock. And Peyton Watson, he took the ball the length of the floor on one possession, got the and one layup, missed the free throw. And then that was the only thing that he did, I think, where he actually created something for himself or others. He had 2 points, 3 rebounds, 0 assists, 1 turnover. Christian Brown had 0 assists, 1 turnover. 1 of 4, both of them. So people are wondering, and people keep criticizing Murray for over dribbling a little bit. And I think 5555-ish says it best. This is where you miss Bruce Brown the most. The stagger units, where you can have a secondary creator like a Bruce Brown, and he could go off the dribble, he can get all the way to the rim, he's more comfortable in those situations. That is definitely where his specific skill set fits so well in those moments. And these are in those playoff moments where everybody's being very aggressive. And Bruce Brown, he got very aggressive in those moments. And you love that about him. With Christian Brown and Peyton Watson, I'm still waiting on that. I want to see it because they're going to be asked to do more. And if they can't do more, then that's where playoff weaknesses start to really show up. So I'm curious to see how it goes. I think that that's going to be something that I'll be paying attention to. It's one of the reasons why I was talking about maybe Denver needs something else at the trade deadline. They could win without that for sure. And I'm not going to sit here and like victory lap if it doesn't go well, because I want it to go well for Denver too. But I do think that there are some weaknesses here with that particular group. We will see. The other weakness that shows up for Denver's offense is when Jokic is playing without Murray. And you get moments like towards the middle to the end of the third quarter where Porter goes out, he gets some rest, and Murray goes out, he's going to stagger. And then you have these lineups like Denver was playing last game with Reggie Jackson, KCP, Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, Nikola Jokic, where the entire goal is to get it to that guy, is to get it to the five. And he struggled to get the ball there, or they struggled to get him the ball there. That's one of, I think, my biggest criticisms with Reggie, is that he struggles to get the ball to Jokic in some situations. Also had a pretty bad turnover stepping out of bounds in clutch time last game. And when you struggle to get the ball to Jokic in a lineup like that, then that's going to be an issue. That's going to be a problem. Denver's got to find better ways to get their best player the ball. And this is kind of what happens when you have a center who is like the main guy. Most teams, like Shaq, Hakeem, I don't know, Kareem, like those giants of legend, like sometimes as a center, you struggle to get those guys the ball in situations where the ball pressure is being applied, where somebody's playing three-quarter defense and they're kind of reaching over Jokic, just trying to get around him in the post and things like that, and there's no passing angle. And so you get to those places, and if you struggle to get Jokic the ball, and then they immediately double as soon as he catches it, there's not a lot for him to do. And so you need the spacing in those situations. You need the spacing of a Michael Porter Jr. to make sure that those areas on the floor where Jokic is catching the ball are not so crowded, are not being double teamed, that he can actually operate. If there is MPJ, Denver's all right. Denver's doing just fine. If there's no MPJ, then the opposing team feels like they can all have a foot inside the paint. And if that's the case, then like you're going to need some guys to hit shots, whether it's Peyton Watson or Christian Brown or whoever. You're going to need guys that are very, very comfortable in those situations. And Denver, I think, is going to take some time to get there. So those are the two. When Denver's starters are out there, everything's generally great, right? Like that's perfectly fine. They've got guys that can, like, you have Jokic, Murray, and MPJ on the floor at the same time, Aaron Gordon providing pressure in the dunker spot, things like that. When those guys are out there together, you don't have any concerns about the offense. When they're not, and you start breaking things up, it is on Christian Brown and Peyton Watson and Reggie Jackson and Justin Holiday and anybody that comes in off the bench to provide a skill set that they can offer on the offensive end. Because if they're not offering anything, opposing defenses are going to react, and that is generally going to be pretty bad. It's going to look pretty clunky, kind of like it did last night. So I'm not breaking any news here. People know this. People understand that this is an issue, and the Nuggets understand that this is an issue. This is why the development of Christian Brown and Peyton Watson is so important. It's why a guy like Julian Strother is so important going forward, because of the spacing. In theory, he hasn't shot the ball great, but the spacing in theory is much better. It's going to be funny. going to be interesting. And I am very curious to see how Denver goes about it. The only other weakness that I see with Denver's offense is apathy, is boredom, is not wanting to do the detail work all the time. And if that's the case, they'll be just fine. Like, because they're going to learn how to get around that in a playoff series. That's not something I'm super concerned about. All right. Timing out this guy who's just constantly complaining about Murray for some reason. Like, I don't understand it. Like, you know, something that I've seen that I'll finish the second segment with this. I've seen a lot of the Michael Porter has been the second best player for Denver post All-Star break takes. I've seen a lot of that for whatever reason. I mean, to his credit, like, Porter's played great. He's been a very, very good. I don't want to dispel that entirely. Here are Jamal Murray's numbers post All-Star break. 22 points, 7.5 assists, 59.2% true shooting. He's shooting 49.6% from the field, 44.6% from three. And he's averaging just over 2 turnovers a game. Like, his numbers have improved across the board too. And he's been pretty efficient. He's carrying a heavy usage. He's carrying a heavy burden for the second unit. And he's shooting nearly 45% from three, like, post All-Star break. They can both be very good. Like, both of them. Every single time that, like, Michael Porter does well, it feels like half the fan base is focused on, oh, yeah, he's better than Murray. Oh, yeah, he is, like, somebody that they should be trusting more. He's the second best player. Like, guys, the pecking order has not been upset. Not yet. We'll give it time. Maybe this changes. Maybe it changes going forward, but I just don't, like, I don't see it as necessary for people to be doing this all the time, where they're kind of putting those guys, like, against each other. Like, when Murray has been looking for Porter as often as he has, like, he's been looking and actively searching out for him. So, I don't know. Like, Jokic is averaging as much as he does. Porter's shooting well. Murray's shooting well, too. Like, let's just let it live. They're 12-2 post-All-Star break. Come on. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to chat about the final 13 games of the season and how Denver's, the hardest part of their schedule, has just wrapped up. Should be very good. But first, this podcast, as you know, we are sponsored by Pickaxe and Roll.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, final segment here, Pickaxe and Roll. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Doing my best. I thought it was going to be shorter. I'm going to power through this final segment. The hardest part of Denver's schedule is finally over. They just finished up a 4-game road trip. Denver has 5 road games remaining on the season. 5. They've got 13 games remaining total. 8 at home, 5 on the road. And the only actual trip that they have that's a, like, just not a one-off kind of road spot is a 2-game road trip on the final couple days of the season against San Antonio and Memphis. So they're in a pretty good spot from a positional standpoint, from a standing standpoint, but also just from a schedule standpoint. They're going to be able to rest up a little bit while still playing their guys. They're still going to have to do the work. Obviously, you can't just let go of the rope entirely. But Denver, at this point, like, they've done the majority of what they have to do. I don't think that there's anything in particular that I'm looking at where Denver has to do much more of anything else. Like, there are certain lineups that I want to see them try. There are certain weaknesses that they've have that I'd like to see them iron out a little bit. But for the most part, I've seen everything that I need to see to prove that Denver's the favorite to come out of the West. And once you get to the NBA Finals, like, see who they play on the other side. I think that, like, based off of the way that Denver has handled this post-All-Star break stretch, 12-2, some of those games have been way tougher, and Denver's been able to get through them. Some of them have been relatively easy, and Denver's been, like, they've taken care of business for the most part. The only two losses that they have, as everybody knows, to the Suns at home, where Denver kind of trolled for much of that game offensively, and then against the Mavericks, where Denver kind of trolled on their defensive glass, like, and they had an opportunity to win it at the end, and it just didn't happen. So Denver's been taking care of business. They've done a pretty solid job. Okay, this guy's back because his timeout is over. The Nuggets need someone better than Murray. Do they really? Like, are you kidding? Like, do they really? Didn't they just win a championship last year? Like, what happened last year? Wasn't Murray pretty good? Wasn't he pretty good in the playoffs last year? Wasn't this something that you can probably expect him to do it again? What are we doing? Come on, man. Like, this is just is completely unnecessary. They literally won a championship with this group. They don't have to do anything else. Like, what they needed was a Bruce Brown replacement. That's all they really needed. So, I don't know. Look. Murray was close to winning to being an All-Star this last year. Probably not super close, but it also just doesn't matter at all. Like, I don't know. Final few things here. Denver's got the 29th toughest strength of schedule, which means second easiest strength of schedule. And that comes from playing a variety of teams. You've got the Spurs a couple times. I think you got the Grizzlies a couple times. But they've also got some tough ones. Like, they've got the Knicks coming up. And that's a tough one. Like, because they got blown out by 38 points against the Knicks at the end of their road trip. Now, the Knicks, they are also injured, pretty clearly. And Denver's going to have to rise above that. And they certainly can. But then they've got the Blazers. They go on the road to the Blazers. And then Denver has a 5-game homestand versus the Grizzlies, versus the Suns, versus the T-Wolves, versus the Cavs, and versus the Spurs. So Grizzlies and Spurs should be relatively easy. Suns, T-Wolves, Cavs, that's going to be hard. That's going to be tough. I hope that muted my mic. Sorry if you heard that. Yeah, not like Suns, T-Wolves, Cavs will be tough. That'll be pretty. Like, that's an interesting stretch where if Denver can win all of those games, then they're in a really good spot. If you win two of the three, you're still probably okay. If you win one of the three, then you're probably not getting the one seed. The OKC Thunder, by comparison, have the sixth toughest schedule. They also have a variety of road games that they still have left to play. Let me just go to their schedule real quick so I can describe what I'm meaning. Like I said, sixth toughest schedule for them. And they have a 3-game road trip coming up and a 5-game road trip coming up. Now, it's mixed in with a couple homestands. Like, they've got a 2-game homestand and they've got 4 home games to end the year. Although those are against Sacramento, San Antonio, Milwaukee, and Dallas. So 3 of those 4 teams might be competing for something. San Antonio, probably not. But because OKC's got these road trips, I'm curious to see how they handle that pressure. I'm curious to see what they can do. It will be interesting to see what they can figure. Like, can they figure this out? I'm going to be very curious as to whether Denver can get the one seed or not. They can. Like, we've seen what they've done so far, and we've seen what their record is through this time. Standings, Denver's at 48-21. They need 10 more wins. They need to go 10-3 during this stretch in order to beat their franchise record. And I think that they can do that. I think that they can. Whether they actually do, we'll see what happens. Like, I think Denver could also rest at various points. You get Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic some rest, and that will probably benefit them for the playoffs. But I don't know. We're gonna have to see. We're gonna have to find out. Folks, let me know what you think about Denver's end of season schedule. Let me know what you think about where Denver's at. By the way, Minnesota has the 17th toughest schedule. I think that's, like, given the injuries that Minnesota has sustained, given that Denver now, like, they're 1-1 against them in the head up, Denver does need to win all three of the matchups against Minnesota, like this one and then the next two, in order to clinch a tiebreaker. But if they just win at least one of them and guarantee that they are, like, tied 2-2 in that matchup, then I think Denver will outpace what Minnesota is currently doing because of their injuries. So we will see. We'll see whether they can do it. But I think that's going to do it for this episode of Pick Action Roll. I'm struggling to get through this, doing my best. We will see what they do. That is going to do it for this episode of Pick Action Roll, brought to you by our good friends over at Superbook Sports. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Apologies for the trolls who clearly just ignored last year. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really appreciate all the love and support. Hit that like button on the way out if you can. I will be back. Not sure exact. I think probably Friday morning is when I'll do my next podcast, but we'll let you guys know if anything changes on that front. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you guys very soon.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.